classroom organization. I feel we've already heard a fair bit about this subject already this morning. Hopefully we can learn a little bit more. Why classroom organization? Is it really that important? Well, what do we have without organization? We have chaos. I don't think any of us desire to have that in our classrooms. Beyond that, efficient studying takes place only in an organized environment when there are a few distractions and surprises. And we have the biblical instruction that all things be done decently and in order. Classroom organization is important. Where does classroom organization start? I believe it starts with an organized teacher. Students left to themselves, a classroom left to itself, will tend to disorder and confusion, not orderliness. And so we as the teacher need to take our places in the classroom, be in control of our classroom, and lead out in an organized, orderly way. When do we start? The first day of school. The best time to start with organization. If you haven't done it, if you didn't do it then, do it now. It's not too late. You need to have organized classrooms, and it takes continual maintenance throughout the year. It's not a one-time process. All right, looking at a few practical pointers of classroom organization, areas where we should be organized, areas where, that will help us to spend less time with unnecessary details, have a plan, and thinking especially of the first day. When are you going to pass out supplies, Bibles, workbooks, etc.? And how will you do it? Will you have students help you passing out materials? Have a plan in mind so that you can work through it efficiently when you get there. And make sure you have all supplies handy for that first day. Have orderly classroom procedures and let the students know how they will be following them. Don't assume too much, and I think this is maybe more of a problem for teachers who have taught multiple years at the same school. We tend to think that students should just know what we expect, but students forget and need to be reminded of things. So tell them what you expect of them, which side of their desk to stand on when you're having oral reading, or how you are to there to file in and out of the classroom. How to pass papers efficiently if you do much passing papers. You might want to give some specific direction there, passing over the left shoulder. May they leave their desks to get reference books without asking permission, and if so, how many at a time? It's an area where if it is left to the student's discretion, it can cause for unnecessary disturbances in the classroom. You may choose to have a system of hand signals for different things in your classroom, getting drinks, using the restroom, and so on. If you do, make sure the students know what those signals are and how you will be responding to them. Help things flow smoothly. Another help to organization can be to have a place for finished assignments. So the students know, once they're finished with their math paper or whatever it is, what to do with it. Have a specific place for them. Insist on students being organized in their lessons. And this is something that can save you a lot of time as a teacher and checking and that type of thing. If you teach the students how to set up their lessons in an organized and orderly fashion, and I personally like to have my students lay out their lesson like the textbook is laid out. That way, for checking, you can basically follow the same pattern throughout the book. Makes it more efficient. Have a schedule and stick to it. We say variety is the spice of life, and that's true, but like Brother Kenneth shared with us this morning, if we want to have variety, we first need to have a schedule. We can't have variety without a schedule. When students know what will happen, it helps to promote a relaxed atmosphere where learning can happen efficiently. Know how you're going to go about teaching today's lessons. And this enters into preparation before the day. And especially if you're working in a multi-grade classroom, know which grades will need the most help with their lessons, or how you're going to go about teaching the different grades. You might need to get one grade started on a review exercise or something till you can get to them. But have a plan. If you have photocopies, quizzes, and things like that that you want to have for your lessons, make sure you have them or have them copied beforehand. It can save unnecessary trips to the photocopier throughout the class period. Have a plan book and use it. Write in it. I find for myself, the more I write, the less I need to use it. Know what you're going to do that day. And be the example to your students. We already touched on that partly, but be organized yourself. Are we like the teacher who gets his book out of the bookshelf, teaches one lesson, sets it down on his teacher's desk, grabs the next book, does the same with that, stacks it on top, and keeps going that way till the end of the day, and then stands behind his desk at the end of the day and tells his students to organize their desks? We should be the example and have organized desks ourselves. When teacher and students all do their part in organization in the classroom, wasted time can be minimized and learning enhanced. And the quote that I came across in relation to this: the organized and orderly classroom with clear and reasonable expectations helps create a calm atmosphere where energy is not stifled but channeled toward learning. I like the last part of that quote. Energy is not stifled but channeled toward learning. And I think that is the desire of each one of us as teachers in our classrooms, is to channel energy towards learning.
Sometimes it's good to backtrack a bit. I failed to introduce Luke Stutzman. As you think of the discussion period coming later, it's maybe important to know who said what, so you know you're all thinking about the same comment and the same person when you're in your discussion time. So that was Luke Stutzman. And next one coming forward is Clifton Eby. Come forward.
Task prioritization. They say the wheel that squeaks gets the grease, right? It's the wheel that squeaks that makes us stop everything else we're doing and look. And it's the squeaky wheel that reminds us over and over again of something that needs to be done. It's a squeaky wheel that irritates us until we forget about all other deadlines and all other needs just to get that squeaky wheel to stop squeaking. That is our default mode, only addressing needs and fixing problems once we cannot ignore them. But God does not always squeak. God does not always demand. He may remain as quiet as the paper I forgot about on the bottom of that stack from last month, or wait, actually from last year. Still never got to. And neither do all the other wheels of duty that need grease squeak. Some suffer in silence if we don't prioritize. Task prioritization is sorting our workload into levels. The must-do on top, the should-do, and the could-do. Or maybe you like to think about it as organizing your jobs into four categories: the urgent, the important, the not urgent, and the not important. Teaching is definitely one of those jobs that brings with it a very diverse list, very diverse to-do list on a daily basis. Sometimes that list might appear on the backside of a used envelope like a cantilevered stack of phrases tilting precariously to one side, and sometimes it scurries back and forth in the freeways of your mind, clogging up all the space that should be used for the traffic that belongs there. It's 6:30 in the morning, and teacher Brandon pauses to stare out the window, mentally retracing that same well-worn path every morning. Okay, personal devotions, or maybe that can wait until this evening. Start the coffee, take a shower, eat breakfast. Unless I skipped that. I didn't shave yesterday. Get my school devotions idea down on paper. I need some way to get that familiar truth in a fresh way, or at least spend enough time with it that it becomes part of myself, so I'm ready for it to come out of me when I get there. And if I can find a complimentary reference or a good story to go with it. And I brought that grade 8 history lesson, grade 9 and 10 Bible lesson, grade 7 reading story home last night, just a preview. Never got that done yet. Will the students notice or suffer, or will class time suffer if I shortcut my preparations for those? They'll probably notice more in some ways if they can't see their grades from yesterday's science test still lying on top of my desk at school and the compositions from last week are still underneath them. And once I get to school, I need to post up assignments, coordinate with the other teachers because today we're all playing together and we need to choose a game that will work together and see if I can take care of that sharp spot that Sherry keeps talking about snagging her dress on her desk there. Will I prioritize to have time to interact with my students before the first bell? Or it's 11 o'clock in the morning in the grade 1 to 3 classroom and teacher's trying to work with corrections, has some students working on the board. If she can't get there fast enough, they get a little bit silly because, okay, and the whole time in the back of her mind she's thinking, that idea I was going to use for second grade class coming up, I'm running out of time for that, or should I just drop that and go to first grade drill because they need that so badly, and there's a hand flagging frantically that it's tempting to just answer quickly, but she knows there's another hand that's not flagging frantically because the student that really needs help is just staring listlessly out the window. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and teacher Lori needs to choose whether to spend lots of time talking to other teachers, none at all, or try to find the benefit of just a 15-minute recess for her mind. Then there are the mounds of checking, the science table to clean up, getting familiar with tomorrow's lessons, the art supplies she was dreaming of shopping for, the friend who wanted to call back, and the invitation for supper. Jesus taught us, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things should be added to us. He taught us, take no anxious thought for some of this huge list of details. So we're not supposed to get too anxious about it. We need to prioritize because there is too much to do. There are more things that could be done than we realistically get done in a day's time, than we can realistically get done in a day's time and keep our sanity still intact. That's why we need to list out those details in front of us and start marking each one with a 1, 2, or 3. 1 is for everything vital that absolutely must be done. This could well include getting enough sleep, personal devotions. What about eating breakfast? Investing in the moral, spiritual, and even emotional well-being of your students while you're there as their teacher. If academics take priority to some of these things, something's mixed up. But at the same time, isn't academic preparation, planning your classes, knowing your material, that's a priority 1, 2, because that's what you're hired to do. To maintain integrity with your calling, you have to know your lessons. And checking. Now we're getting into number 2. Priority 2 is things that are important but not absolutely vital. Sometimes the checking and the grading can wait. They're a major part of your job, but they must take second place. And I would suggest even taking second place to preparation for teaching the next day. Are you going to have enough time to prepare for teaching and then see what time is left for checking? It has its balance, but remember that keeping the momentum going forward with preparation as a priority 1 and checking as a priority 2 may help your classroom. And the number 3s on your list, all those things that you could do that you would really like to do, extracurricular activities, bringing in from other resources, bulletin boards, etc. Feel free to use number 3s on that list of your priorities. As much as I'd like to invest in this thing, I will not panic. Emotional freedom is more important, and that's what Jesus taught us about taking no anxious thought. Get the first things first and don't panic about what doesn't get done immediately. We need to prioritize because what's most obvious to do may not be most important. Teaching the class on the schedule may be the most obvious. Skipping class to address a student need may be most important. Answering the hand that's waving may be the most obvious. Helping the student that really needs help may be the most important. We need to prioritize because what's easiest to do may not be most important. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, our undisciplined tendency is to reach for the easiest thing to do. When reading ahead in the textbook or checking those fill-in-the-blank lessons may be easiest, it may be important to get those compositions out and put your feedback on them when it's still and grade them when it's still fresh on the student's mind. They can actually benefit from being graded and evaluated. While I said we need to prioritize because what's easiest to do may not be most important, what's easiest to do is for the teacher to gear his teaching toward the average and above student. What may be most important is to gear his teaching to make sure the needs of the slow student are being met. We need to prioritize because we need to discipline ourselves to get the important things done before they jump over in the urgent box. Everything important will move to urgent if it's not done while it's important. Think about report cards. At one point, they're in the important box, and next day, they are urgent. School yearbooks, are they a priority 1, 2, or 3? Well, they might be a priority 3 in themselves, but if you've chosen to do it, it becomes important. And if you neglect it, it may become urgent. We need to prioritize because we are stewards. First of all, stewards of our students' time. The higher priority we put on preparation for the day, the faster we can get said and done what needs to be done. Maybe this means checking after school instead of in class together for some. Whatever it is for you, you're stewards of your students' time. You're also stewards of other people's children. We need to prioritize other people, the parents' interests and the board's interests above our own interests. If we don't watch out, if we don't prioritize, we'll tend to make decisions that serve self. We need to prioritize because we have more incentive to do what will be seen than what goes unnoticed. Like a talk for Teacher Inspiration Day. The deadline's coming. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be stuck on the spot. I must be prepared. People won't notice what got shoved back this week in order to put on a good display. Bulletin boards, whatever it is. What is seen tends to get our incentive going more than what goes unnoticed. Therefore, we have to prioritize some things that get unnoticed. Prioritizing and closing means being sober enough to consider what is most important and best, not just what I feel like doing. Being disciplined enough to do what ought to be done and not merely what I am motivated for. And temperate enough to release myself from what can wait till later so I can enjoy serving enough to come back another year.
Thank you, Clifton Eby. Next one, time management. It's just a little different angle. Josh Bauman.
Good afternoon. My voice is not great, so I'm going to hope that it survives, and hopefully you can survive for 7 minutes here. My title is Time Management. I looked up, so Ephesians 5:16 talks about redeeming the time because the days are evil. And I looked up the definition for that word redeeming, and I thought it was really good, so I'm going to read it here for you because I think it gives us some context with this. It says, to make wise and sacred use of every opportunity for doing good, so that zeal and well-doing, as it were, the purchase money by which we make the time our own. So, focusing on that, making wise and sacred use of every opportunity that we have for doing good. So, the days are evil, and so I think as teachers, we are obligated to take every opportunity to make wise use of our time. I'm intrigued by those people who just get a lot done. You know, they have about 43 different projects going, and they keep the loose ends from flapping at all 43 of them. Great time managers, right? That's intriguing to see. I know a man like this. He just gets a lot done. He just, the amount of work he gets done in a day, it makes you stand in awe. But the thing with him is, so he can hardly stop working to talk to you. You get talking, and he gets all fidgety, and it's time to get moving. And I think we can be a little bit like this in classrooms as well. There's a lot of stuff to get done in a day, but I don't think we should be such good time managers that nobody knows us. I think we should be able to talk with our students. And if you look at the subtitle of this series of talks, it says, less time, more value. And I think one of the most important things, or one of the best uses of our time, is to take time to be a mentor and a friend to our students. I think sometimes this might come at the expense of our schedule, but I think sometimes there's a discussion that pops up, or maybe it's more a one-on-one thing with the students, a student, and we just need to take some time and discuss the things that are important to them. There's also a time when it's just time to buckle down and get the work done. Otherwise, it's not going to get done. But I think if you're willing to listen to your students and get involved in their lives, it's going to make it easier for them to listen to you. Think about yourself when you're at church or something. When someone gets up to speak, the relationship you have with that person affects how easy it is for you to concentrate on what they're saying. And it's not the only factor, but it does make a difference. And I think it's the same way at school. I appreciated your insights, Craig, on relationships. I think that was really good. And I think every godly authority figure in a child's life who they can have a relationship with is a step towards God. And so I think this should be a priority in our time management. So the point is, being a friend to your students is not a waste of time. It's one of the best uses of your time, I believe. All right, a few more practical tips that came out of some are my experience, some are just talking with other teachers. Learn self-discipline. Don't be a do-what-you-feel-like-when-you-feel-like-it type of person. Learn to go to bed and get up at good times. Learn good personal habits. The mindset that you develop through this helps you get work done. And so become a disciplined person. Get your exercise. In office jobs, people who work out regularly are more motivated and productive than those who don't exercise. And some of that is also due to the habits, I think, the disciplined habits that are formed. But make exercise a priority. Hopefully you get some at recess, but make exercise a priority. It's going to help you get things done. Schedule. Schedule provides a pathway to completion. So build your schedule in a way that lets you use your teaching time most effectively. So in a multi-grade classroom, plan your schedule so that you can teach one grade while the other grades have work they can do on their own. And when it's time to start the next subject, don't wait for students to finish the previous one. Just get started and keep your schedule moving. Prioritize sticking to your schedule. Before school, plan which grades to teach first so that your students aren't sitting bored because they don't know how to do something, or maybe worse, doing everything wrong. So plan which grades to teach first so that you're never having students that don't know how to do their work. And this has been mentioned, but have all tests, quizzes ready before school starts. That way if you're missing something, you're not wasting time photocopying or whatever. Take enough time to teach thoroughly and make sure students are participating and thoroughly understand the concept before moving on. So don't just demonstrate how to do long division or casting out nines and then leave them to it. Make sure they're all participating and understand it. Some teachers like to send their students to the class or to the blackboard to do a few problems up there. I tended to more just get them to do a few problems in their books and then check it and make sure they're getting it right. However you do it, make sure they understand the concept. After school, when they're all gone, all the students leave, and it's kind of like you were on all day and now you can just turn off, you still need to be good at managing your time in order to get your stuff done so that you can be effective the next day. So one thing here, one big thing I think, is limit your phone usage. So act like you're on the clock. This is just one little thing that helps me sometimes. Act like you're on the clock, you're getting paid for your time. You might need a little bit of time to check some messages or whatever, but then put your phone away, start getting stuff done. I also use time limits on apps that are easy to spend too much time on, so That's just something that works for me. But however it works for you, limit your phone usage because you can spend too much time on your phone. Don't talk with your co-teachers too long. It is important to plan and communicate, stay on the same page. Make sure you're getting along with your co-teachers because that'll save some time too, I think. But it's easy to get talking and all of a sudden an hour and a half is gone. And it might have been more valuable spending time planning for the next day. So don't talk too long. Do tasks according to how difficult you perceive them to be. So start with the hard stuff, and it puts you on a roll. You get the big thing done, and all of a sudden you're just rolling down the hill, and you're getting stuff done and crushing it. So get the hard stuff out of the way first. And then the easier stuff is easier to do. Block time for studying. So we can never get done studying everything we could possibly do for the next or study for the next day. So what works good for me is to block some time. So give yourself limits on how much time you're going to spend on each subject. So, you know, you're going to prepare for devotions for 20 minutes. You have to get it done in 20 minutes. Study science for 30 minutes, etc. So just give yourself limits for how long you can spend in each thing. And with all this, also, don't compare yourself with other teachers because we all have different limits. You know, Betsy over here works 16 hours a day and she just gets a lot of stuff done. But figure out what works for you and figure out what your sustainable best performance is and just be content with that because we all have different limits. So figure out what works for you and keep focused on providing the most value you can. Don't burn yourself out because then you're not providing value to anyone anymore. So keep in mind, less time, more value for God's kingdom.
Thank you, Josh Bauman. It's we work with it, we have to focus on it, or it gets away on us. Next, we have Digital Organization by Philip Hurst.
Good afternoon. Digital content equals data, right? Now, give me a raise of hands. How many people have lost data? If you've lost digital data, raise your hands. Don't be embarrassed. Okay. There's only two groups of people in the world. Those that have lost data and those that will lose data. Only two. So if you didn't raise your hand, you still have it coming. What is data? What is digital? Data comes in the form of text, observations, figures, images, numbers, graphs, symbols. And think in terms of, you know, it could be all kinds of things. Data contains information, right? Data in the raw form. Data, let's say it this way. Digital content or digital data in the raw form is like knowledge in the raw form. That's all it is. Just content. All right. For the next few minutes, I'm going to just talk about how do we store this content? What's some hacks? What's some best practice? How do we store content digitally? Because some of you have lost it, and we want to prevent that. Number one, make a conscious decision whether your digital storage is king or whether your filing cabinet is king. Conscious decision, one or the other. One is king, the other one is a servant to that king. Make a conscious decision and live your life that way. I say this first because it truly is that important. It truly is number one. If your filing cabinet is king, then your computer is simply a tool or a device to generate content that you can then go over to your filing cabinet, you know, and drop it in there. Vice versa, if your digital storage is king, then you're going to have a scanner, and you're going to scan a lot of things, and you're going to just file it in. Decide. If your digital storage is king, which I believe it should be, then you need to have a good scanner and be disciplined. You know, sometimes, even if your digital storage is king, sometimes we still save things, some sentimental things, you know, that paper that some student gave you that you want to save. We save those things, but you might also scan it. All right, number two, compartmentalize and organize your files into folders. This is super simple, but you got to do this. You actually have to create folders, name them significant names, and then put your files into them. I know this is simple, folks, but it matters, okay? Create main folders that identify major categories of your life, like school, church, or personal. Within these folders, add lots of subfolders. Be liberal. For instance, in your school folder, you might have a folder called devotions, or bulletin boards, or Christmas program, or art. You know, you could have subject folders like art, music, whatever. I'm not a school teacher, so I'm making this up. What happens inside of these folders is also very critical. Within the Christmas program folder, you might have 10 more folders for every year that you've taught. You know, Christmas program, 2022, 2023, 2024, organized by years within that. In that case, it makes sense to organize annually. All right. If you have, sometimes we have templates for things we do. So if you have a Christmas program folder and you have, you know, subfolders and content in there that you repeat year after year after year, sometimes what I do is I copy a previous folder, paste it, and then just edit and tweak it. Make sense? Kind of use folders, previous folders, as templates for new ones. How should I name these files? Again, super simple, but I'm going to give you some hacks. Name your files consistently. Do it the same every time. This is more important than how you do it. Consistency here is more important than exactly how you do it. I don't exactly care whether you do the date first or... I don't really care. I have my way of doing it. But here's the thing that I want you to really think about and take home with you is do it the same every time. Mentally, get a methodology, how you name files, put it up here, and then guard that process with your life. Don't ever change it. I know some of you are Apple users, and that's okay. I'm not. But in Windows, I always set to be able to see the file extensions. I want to know whether I'm looking at a Word document or a picture or a whatever. I always set it so that I can see the file details. I can see the full name in a list, the details. You can set Windows that way. You don't have to look at these 2x2 icons. You know what I mean? You make a list, sort it so that it sorts by a list and names. Sort alphabetically. I always do this. I always sort alphabetically, A at the top and Z at the bottom. With a few exceptions, I always start naming my files with the annual year. So I will always say 2024. So if I'm saving a file today, I will always start 2024 space 02 space, what do we got? The 18th today, 16th today, 16, and then I'll do a space and a dash and another space, and then I'll put a little descriptor there. That's how I do mine. I guard that. That's how I name my files. File naming, don't use special characters, with the exception of a few. You can use hyphens. Don't put like percent marks and things like that in your file names. Windows doesn't like that. So just stay away from special characters. Just don't do it. Here's another little hack on sorting things. If you have like 1,000 folders like subfolders in a folder, and there's one that you always want to navigate to, or there's like 5 in there that you always want to navigate to, what you can do with those subfolders is you can start naming them 01, whatever the subfolder name is. Because in Windows, when you sort alphabetically, numeric always comes before alpha. So when you sort those will always pop to the top. 0102, use a 0, don't use 1, go 01. It matters when you go further than 10. Okay? Storage. So I'll warn you right now. The following comments are rather subjective, and it's opinion-based on my life experiences, and I'll freely say that if my life experiences change, I may actually change my opinion. So I'll just say that, okay? Where should we store this content, digital content? Where should we put it? Let me say this kindly. In a crowd like this, there's a small percentage of you that are paranoid conspiracy theorists. And you are adverse to cloud storage. You and I are friends, but we don't think alike. And that's okay with me. We love each other, but we don't agree. Either way, security matters. You know, in the world of anything cloud, or any data storage for that matter, things like password protection, two-factor authentication, these are like non-negotiables in the digital landscape. When you want security, and if you don't know what I just said, like ask somebody. Passwords matter. What your password is matters. Cloud storage. I recommend actually paying for cloud storage. There's some freebies out there. Pay for like mainstream ones. You know, Office 365 if you're Microsoft. Google. Pay for it. It might matter to you at a later date. Pick one and go with it. iCloud if you're an Apple sheep. Dropbox sometimes. I would avoid using obscure, lesser known cloud apps. Pay is critical. If you're a paranoid person, I recommend you go home and just unplug your computer from the internet, because it's the way it is. If your computer is plugged to the internet, it's cloud. All right, wrapping this up, stay clean and occasionally audit. Don't allow yourself a catch-all place where random files hang out and camp for years. Some of you have this folder that it's just full of stuff. And even you don't know what's all in there. Like, just don't do that. This matters. It needs to have a place to go. And put it there. It's like your filing cabinet. You don't have a folder that's a catch-all folder. Maybe you do. Delete things that should be deleted. This is hard. I find this hard for myself. You know, I know I've saved that somewhere else, but am I ready to hit the delete button? We ought to hit delete more often. And just get rid of stuff that we know is filed. File things properly. If you want to keep them for a long term, files don't have a home. Like if you have that folder that has all kinds of stuff in it, you ought to schedule a strategy session with yourself to figure this out. Because life just gets easier. If you get this figured out, life gets easier. Summary. Decide who's king, your filing cabinet or your computer. This matters. Compartmentalize with folders and subfolders. Be liberal with folders, but be organized and concise with how you name them. Be tenaciously consistent in how you name files. Let me say this. If your goal is to mess up your digital life, like, start here. Just don't care how you name files. It happens, okay? You can mess up your digital life very quickly. Pay for cloud storage, occasionally audit your shared links in cloud storage. You know there's this thing called shared links. You should audit through those occasionally. Keep things backed up, stay clean. You know, there's a lot we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about calendars. We didn't talk about tasks. We didn't talk about things like Microsoft OneNote, meeting notes, and how to organize all of that. As I was preparing for this, I thought, you know, I'm going to ask the committee for like 45 minutes or an hour and 45 minutes sometime to like dive deeper into some of this stuff because I'd like to. Thank you, Lauren.
Well, there is diversity. I'm not quite like Philip. My computer is not plugged in, so what's in the computer is just mine. So anyway, we have one more. Discipline Diversity by Kirvin Martin. He's our guest speaker for this day. He traveled a ways to get here, and we're thankful he is here. For Kirvin.
Good afternoon. Josh started out by saying that his voice sounds bad. Mine's worse. But I'm very happy to be here. I want to start by saying that I apologize if I approach this topic from a little bit different angle than what the board had in mind. What I plan to do is to share ideas of how to maintain personal inspiration in learning to further student inspiration in learning. So I hope that these ideas will serve as a help to guard us from something that I like to call robotic teacher syndrome. How can we keep school fresh and interesting? Well, my ideas have mostly to do with different ways of teaching beyond the books. My theory is that if we teach from the books only, we may be lacking personal inspiration. I believe that all of us have personal interests that we can pass on to our students. Remember that more is caught than taught. And we can pass on inspiration and, if nothing else, a hunger for knowledge that our students to our students in a way that I am convinced that their books cannot. So the following is a scattering of ideas that come from teacher friends of mine and my own personal experience and interests. So I plan to go through each subject that we teach in our schools and cover different ideas that apply to each one. Let's start with Bible, which I will say includes the devotionals that we share with our students. Is the Word of God alive to you? I'm going to proclaim to you that the only way to live and feel the Scriptures is to be a personally dedicated researcher of the Word. So here's a short list of specific studies that can be part of your research: biblical geography, archaeology, and culture, the wonders of nature that demonstrate the power and glory of God, and obviously the scriptures themselves, which give us an exclusive and completely accurate insights into the spiritual world, the natural world, the past, the present, and the future. Memory. Many students struggle with this, so if you want, you can learn and then teach them mnemonic devices, the fancy word for memory tricks. I don't have an exceptional memory, but after learning one specific mnemonic device, I recited 200 digits of pi, forwards and backwards, and recited them to my students on Pi Day, March 14, after looking over the numbers only twice. So incorporating mnemonic devices into learning Bible memory is a good idea. Math. One thing that our books are lacking is mental math tricks. Do you know that with some practice, normal people can outperform a person with a calculator? And I'm not talking about multiplying, and I'm talking about multiplying and dividing 4- and 5-digit numbers. I'm not talking about myself. I have some friends that have taken time in learning these tricks, and it's amazing what they can do. Students often become confused as to how the things they are learning connect with everyday life, and this gap can be bridged with story problems. The books may have some, but you can incorporate many more into your teaching. One thing I've done is to make math fun for my students is building an escape room each year. To escape the classroom, which is secured with several padlocks and combination locks, the students have to solve various types of math challenges to find hidden keys and combination numbers. How do you make English fun? There may not be something for every class, but I personally enjoy playing with words when there's an opportunity. Try writing a paragraph with your students that includes as many incorrect homonyms as possible. When it's time to write stories or poetry, I often take a full week off regular English classes to do various activities that help the students to develop these skills. For poetry exercise, put words on the board that have a lot of rhyming words. Give the students a minute or two to write down as many rhyming words as they can. Look at the results and try to make a poem out of it. For a story exercise, give them 5 phrases and have them write a short story that incorporate those ideas. For example, an old camper, 3 lost boys, a wasp nest, a river, and a trapper. Reading and literature. Make a collection of short stories that demonstrate different literary qualities and read them to your students. Broaden their literary horizons. They need it. History. History is really a compilation of stories. Teach it that way. Stories almost always have a lesson to take away. What is life? What life-impacting lessons can we learn from these stories in history? Well, that is something that you can explore and, in turn, teach your students. Science. Personally, this word encompasses probably about 75% of my studying interests. In short, here are some interests that I have incorporated into teaching science. I have a decent microscope, and one very interesting and easy thing to study is something called water fleas, which you can find in a cup of water taken from almost any untreated pond. Building model rocket engines. I have a PDF that I put together on that if anyone is interested. Astronomy, especially keeping track of eclipses and meteor showers. Collecting insects, moths, and butterflies. I also made a PDF on that if anyone is interested. Building simple hot air balloons. You can also build your own kites. Photography. Slow motion can be used to teach physics, hyperlapses to teach about clouds, sunsets, and even plants growing. And obviously, nature photography is a very fun and valuable teaching tool. Music. Do your best to develop your own personal music abilities. It can be so much fun to teach students new songs. If you think it might be feasible, write a song as a class. The musically minded can work on the notes, while the writers can work on the poetry. If you have recording equipment, take some of the favorite songs from the year outside the program songs and record them. It will make many memories and also create great keepsake for the students. Art, something that some students love and others dread. I enjoy drawing, but while faces are probably not a good place to start, illusions and geometric patterns may be a fun starting place. Of course, if you enjoy craft projects, that's something else that you can incorporate into that and teach your students. So after hearing all these ideas, you may still wonder how many of them really cross with your interests. Every teacher will be different as their personal interests are. And that, to me, is part of the beauty of having several teachers throughout one's life. Pursue your own interest and teach what you have learned to your students. And as someone else said a little bit before, don't compare yourself with other teachers that you admire. Relax, be yourself, and enjoy the teaching experience.
Thank you, Kevin, for sharing. I think you've heard a lot in this short time. We'll bring that back to discussion period later. We'll ask you all to stand for change of position.